The Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Exchange Program was founded by Senator J. William Fulbright of Arkansas in 1946, and the idea was there were a lot of people at the time who thought that the way to promote peace in the world after the conflict was to actively wage peace, and that the promotion of educational exchange and cultural relations between states would allow things like that to be possible. Senator Fulbright himself had a very formative experience in the 1920s as a Rhodes Scholar in the UK, so he wanted to kind of democratize that process and create that for Americans. And so it's a bilateral exchange program that for every American we're sending somewhere to the world, we're bringing someone from the world to the United States. And that's a program that has grown and kind of become one of the flagship institutions of American cultural diplomacy.
What were the preparations like? Did you have to, did you give him some tips about, don't do this in Georgia, do this in Georgia, never do this in Georgia?
We talked a little about the history. We talked about the culture. We talked about what Georgians are like, what they like. He did a lot of research himself. I remember one day he showed up in my office with four or five different books that I did not even exist about Georgia and relationship with Georgian history and the politics in Georgia. So he did a lot of his own research that he did not need too much of my help. But we had conversations before he went.
When you first landed in Georgia, what was your first impression like? Did you have any second thoughts?
I was always proud of the decision, and I don't know if I ever had any second thoughts. Something that was really lucky for me is this was my first time living outside of the United States. I'd been to continental Europe. I'd been to Mexico, Canada. But this was my first time making a serious commitment to try to live and work somewhere that was a foreign environment. And what something that attracted me to Georgia is that this is a small state from the former Soviet Union. This is a place that not a lot of Americans have knowledge of or experience with. And so I thought to myself, this will be sufficiently foreign. And that kind of excitement of the unknown is something that was really attractive to me about it. But just the Georgian people, they don't get a lot of foreign guests and a lot of foreign visitors. So when people come, especially Americans, that's a big deal and that's really special. So, you know, it's the closest experience I've ever had to feeling like a celebrity when all of a sudden everyone thinks you're interesting and everyone thinks that everything you do is wonderful. Having Dr. Kate's family there kind of as a surrogate family created a level of security that a lot of other people in my position wouldn't have had. You know, people talk about the experience of having the honeymoon phase somewhere and then becoming really homesick and saying everything about this place is terrible because it's not familiar to me. I was really lucky in that I never had that downswing in the arc of my experience.
Right. But here's the thing. You went to Georgia and you went straight to Kate's hometown. How did that happen?
Well, when I applied for the grant to Georgia, you simply apply to go work in that country. And once you get selected, the cultural affairs staff at the embassy in Tbilisi, they placed us somewhere in the country to work. So I found out about 1 or 2 months before I left for Georgia that I was going to be going to Kutaisi, Dr. Kate's home city. So I had some time to work with her and say, you know, do you know anyone who can help me find an apartment, things like that.
Did that make you nervous, Kate?
I felt a lot of responsibility and some fear that he will not like it in my home country or living in my home city and how he will like my he was placed in the school, the same school that I went as a child. So I had that fear. What if he? Is he? The biggest fear was: is he going to be safe? It's very safe in Georgia, but is he going to be safe? And I was always telling my family and friends, "Oh, take care of him and check on him." And they joked later on. They joked and that he does not need anyone to take care of him. He's taking care of himself and very well.
That was actually one of the only real tensions by the time I was there. Is, you know, as an American, there's this mindset I've been inculcated into of take care of yourself. I don't want to be dependent on people. And that's really difficult in a foreign country, especially where you don't speak the language. one of the big things about Georgian culture is hospitality, hospitality for your guests. So I was in an environment where all of these people, part of being a good Georgian is taking care of me and not letting me do things for myself. So it creates this tension where we both have to kind of mutually negotiate what our roles and responsibilities are going to be to each other. But it was great being able to, you know, Dr. Kate has friends who went to school with her who are now teaching in the English faculty at the university in that city. So I could, on a moment's notice, call one of them up and say, this taxi driver is scaring me. Tell him where I want to go. Tell him to slow down.
That is great.
So I had interpreters on call.
That's great. And you also ended up teaching at her school, the school that Kate studied in.
I found out about 1 or 2 months before I went to Georgia that I would be in her home city, but it wasn't until the day that I arrived in that city, about 3 days after arriving in the country, that I found out I was going to be teaching in the school she attended as a child, and that all of the English teachers I was going to be working with there are people who had taught her when she was, you know, in fifth grade, and that her 10th grade niece was in a class that I taught a couple of times while I was there. So it's this crazy small world circumstance.
Now, what were some of the other highlights of your Fulbright scholarship to Georgia? You were an English teacher there, right?
I was given a very broad mandate by the people I was working for at the embassy. They said, there are these two public schools in Kutaisi, and we want you to go there and make yourself useful. And in terms of what that means, if I'm going to be teaching classes every day or if I'm going to be working with extracurricular activities or doing other kinds of projects, I had a lot of freedom to create that. And I guess the big flagship project that I was most proud of and like to talk about, the director at the school that Dr. Kate attended, he approached me one day and said, we'd like to start a drama club at this school. And, you know, there were special schools for the arts in the city in Georgia, but they didn't have the very active athletic extracurricular arts programs that we're used to in the United States. So given the opportunity to be a part of something like that, I latched onto it. And I said, why don't we put on a full production of a play in English with a cast of students by the end of the year? Mm. And so that was setting the bar very high. And we had this incredible cast of 15 students out of about 60 that auditioned to be a part of the show, and other English teachers were helping us work out with getting the facilities we needed at the public theater and getting costumes from the theater community. Other students at the school, they built a set. They painted elaborate backdrops for us, so it was this big community involvement. One of the students who was on the cast, a 14-year-old girl, took the entire script that we had, which was an English language script, and translated it into Georgian so that a Georgian theater director could work with the students on, you know, the emotive parts of acting and such.
Right.
So I can't speak to how good the translation was, but he seemed to be giving directions that made a lot of sense. So
okay.
The drama club still continues because they are doing another play this year, and my niece is playing casting in one of the roles, I think. But it's still working.
I mean, I'd like to think we started an institution.
Now, you just talked about, one of the challenges about living in Georgia was this tension between, you know, how independent you should be and how much hospitality would you accept. What were some of the other things that you had to come to terms with or, you know, you had a little trouble with about Georgian culture or about the country, how things work there?
Well, a stereotype about that part of the world is the relationship with alcohol. But that was one of the most interesting things for me.
I know you would say that.
the first day I showed up in that school, the school that I was working at, I showed up at 10 o'clock in the morning, and that was the first day of school.
Right.
And so I imagined that the school director would be out visiting classrooms and hanging out with his students. But I walked in with a Georgia national who worked at the U.S. Embassy in Georgia, and she interpreted for us, and we kind of talked about, this is your American, have fun with him. And it was 10 o'clock in the morning on a Wednesday, and he went to a large, what looked like a bookshelf or cabinet in his office that I assumed was full of books. And when he opened it, it was full of bottles of wine and champagne. And so at 10 o'clock in the morning on Wednesday, he pops open that bottle while he's smoking a cigarette inside the building. And we drink a bottle of champagne, the three of us, at 10 o'clock in the morning.
But it's not like people drink there at 10 o'clock in the morning, but right. I think it was part of the hospitality.
Right, a warm welcome of sorts.
Of opening champagne or a bottle of wine and hosting the guest.
It's a sociable thing.
Right.
It's a sociable thing, and so that was just a way of welcoming me. 2 weeks after I was there, I went on an excursion, a field trip with a group of students from the school to an old chapel. It's about 1,000 years old, outside of the city. And we hung out for about an hour, and then it was time for us to have the picnic. And we had brought boxes of food, and then they also brought out 6 2-liter bottles full of beer and a bottle of vodka. And so I'm sitting there with these two other Georgian teachers and a group of 15-year-old students taking vodka shots.
These are
my 15-year-old students. And what's that thing called, the Vaktangani? Where you link arms, Vaktanguri, where you link arms and drink together, and everyone wanted to drink with me, and that's perfectly acceptable. It's a social norm. So as an American, where the relationships between myself and my teachers, there's a distancing, there's
right.
a formality that's implied there, you know, pupil figure of authority. In Georgia, every relationship is much more familial. You know, this is a nation of about 5 million people, and all but a few of them live in that country.
Now, a lot of your time in Georgia doesn't only teach you stuff about Georgia, but also what it's like to live in America and what it's like, you know, what life is like in America. What did you learn about America when you were in Georgia?
Part of understanding any personal identity, that identity doesn't really become clear or salient until you experience an other. And so, you know, I made this kind of like the comment about how discovering that things that you assumed are universals are actually cultural variables, that this is not the right way to do things, this is the American way to do things. Something else that I learned is just what a huge responsibility that we have as individuals in this country, and especially thinking about myself as a young American who has a career in front of me that I'd like to have in public service. I was able to sit down and be invited into the home of a man who was a soldier in the Soviet Army in the 1970s, and he was serving in Eastern Germany when my father was a soldier in the United States Army serving in Western Germany. These were two men standing on opposite sides of a conflict, and they didn't know each other, but they knew that they were playing for their team. And to then be able to see 30 years later, I, as a young American, can be invited into his home so graciously, and that he can be fascinated by me, and that he can want to learn about America and have these warm relationships. That says so much about, you know, the burden for my generation, the way in which all whether or not we're successful is when my 25-year-old son, if he can go to Tehran, if he can go to Pyongyang and sit down at a table with someone and be welcomed and have that kind of warm relationship, that's what I see as my obligation as an American today, to kind of pick up the Fulbright mantle to try to actively wage peace. That we don't have to inherit conflicts